Aruta, thanks for talking with us today. Your new book is called Salt to the Sea, and it's really quite a ride. They bill it as a crossover type of work. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, I'm considered a crossover author. And what that means is that my work is read by both students and young readers, by adult readers, by readers in retirement communities. And it's a very fortunate position for me to be in, and it inspires unlikely conversations between generations.
Well, it's interesting for me because I didn't know that when I started reading the book. And then when I was doing research, I went, oh, okay, I see what this is. That explains why there's so many young people featured in the story. Is it difficult to write in the perspective of a young person?
For me, it's not. I remember what it was like to be, you know, an adolescent. And I think young people are deep thinkers and deep feelers. And they process story and characters with a tremendous sense of emotional truth. And I have to tell you that young readers are very honest readers. They'll tell you exactly what they like and don't like. So I think the harder thing is not writing young adult characters, but perhaps, you know, writing for the young adult audience. But it's an honor to do it, for sure.
Are there any of the characters that you had a special relationship with or you related to in some way?
Yes, there are. The character of Joanna Vilkas is a Lithuanian nurse who has fled from Lithuania, is on the run, and is trying to reunite with her family. And that storyline itself mirrors my own father's storyline. He left Lithuania as a boy when the Soviets occupied and spent 9 years as a refugee and as a displaced person in camps and before he was able to come to the United States. And so that character of Joanna Vilkas is loosely based on my father's journey and also on the story of a woman who was in fact a nurse and was on the Wilhelm Gustloff when it sank.
And I'm glad you brought up the Wilhelm Gustloff. And this is another thing that surprised me. I guess I'm kind of a history nerd, and I've read a lot of World War II type era and a lot on the Soviet and the Baltics. I really didn't know anything about this ship disaster. Can you briefly explain what it is to those that might not know, which is probably a lot of people?
Certainly, I'd be happy to. Everyone knows of the Titanic, this leisure cruise ship that so tragically sank and over 1,500 people lost their lives. But near the end of World War II, there was a ship that sank with a death toll that dwarfed both the Titanic and the Lusitania combined, but most people have never heard of this. The ship was called the Wilhelm Gustloff, and it sailed during a refugee evacuation, an evacuation that was called Operation Hannibal. And the ship held about 1,500 people, but when it sailed, during a snowstorm in January of 1945, it was carrying over 10,000 people. And it was torpedoed in the dark of night by a Soviet submarine and sank in less than 60 minutes, and over 9,000 people perished. It's the single largest maritime disaster in history, but much of the world, you know, has never heard of it. And like you, when I first heard of this, I was shocked. I had to go look it up and see, is this true? You know, then if so, what determines how history is preserved and recalled? You know, why did I not know about this?
And why don't we?
Well, I have a couple of theories. I spoke to some people in Germany, and the Wilhelm Gustloff was a German ship. And what the German people explained to me, they said, yes, we're very aware that we have our own version of the Titanic. They said, however, considering our atrocities during World War II, we feel it's inappropriate to position ourselves as victims. And so we're not going to speak of this sea disaster. And then the submarine that torpedoed the ship, the Soviet sub, shortly after the sinking of the Wilhelm Gustloff, the captain of the submarine was actually exiled to Siberia for bad behavior, something completely separate from this sinking. So the Russians weren't speaking about it, and the Germans weren't speaking about it, and the story slipped through the cracks of history.
It's really amazing, and the book is very powerful in that it brings this story to light through the perspectives of several people, and even some of the characters that don't have their own chapters, like the shoe poet. By the way, the shoe poet is a really great character. How did you come up with that?
Yes, this elderly man that I call the shoe poet in the book. I was actually on tour in Italy for my first novel, and I was walking down this cobbled street in Rome, and on the side of a building was an inset window with nothing but a pair of shoes. There wasn't a storefront. It was just this inset window. And I asked my publisher, I said, "What is that?" And she said, "Oh, Ruta, it's the most famous shoemaker in all of Italy. His shoes, they're pure poetry." And she said, "Can you imagine?" And so I started to imagine shoes as poetry and who would be the poet of shoes. And I ran back to my hotel and I sketched out the character of this man, this wise sort of sage, the shoe poet.
You did 3 years of research for this book, which means you must have heard a lot of stories. You talked to a lot of people in Poland and beyond. Are there a lot of real stories intertwined in this book?
Yes, there are so many real stories intertwined, and that's one of the benefits that I have as writing fiction. Many people will ask me, why don't you just write nonfiction? But if I write fiction, I can interview hundreds of people and weave elements together and kind of quilt together these characters. So the characters are a bit of a composite, and I hope in doing that, that perhaps I'm representing a larger human experience than, let's just say, the experience of one human being or one family.
Right. And one of the most powerful things about this book is, as I'm reading it, I really start to see these people beyond their nationalities or beyond their backgrounds, of all of which are very important. But, you know, in the typical World War II era story, there's always the good guys and the bad guys, right? And this story has Lithuanians, has Poles, it has East Prussians, Germans. How did you manage to pull that off? And was that a goal of yours to sort of get it away from the typical World War II narrative?
Oh, I can't tell you how much that means to me that you would say that and feel that way. Because, yes, as I was researching and I traveled to 6 different countries, speaking to different people, to me, it felt clear that regardless what side these people stood on, suffering emerged the victor, and they were united in their victimhood to some extent. And I wanted to point that out. I also wanted to point out that often in times of conflict, it's the young people who are the losers. And all of these young teenagers, they were victims of war and vengeful regimes. And then after the war, what I think about so often is that it was these young people who were left with an inheritance of heartache and responsibility for something that they had no role in causing. And so, yes, I wanted the reader to feel that these people were more alike than different.
That brings up the next point is on the Wilhelm Gustloff, what, about 500 children died?
Actually, the estimates are 5,000 teenagers and children. That
wow.
of the 9,000 who perished, that 5,000 were children. And that was because the Germans had an initiative to save the kids. So there were some families who told me that they arrived at the port and maybe they were a family of 5. And the Germans told them, no, you can't all board, but you can choose one child. And some parents did that. They, and in many cases, they chose the oldest teenager, or the mother would get on with the infant. And so, yes, there were over 5,000 children on board the Wilhelm Gustloff.
Wow. For that alone, it's amazing that we haven't heard more about it. Are you getting reactions from people? And I'm curious, are you hearing from people, say, in the area, Lithuania, Poland, Germany, that are reading the book? Are you getting interesting reactions from those people?
I am, and this is one of the many wonderful things about writing historical fiction, is that I write the book, and I hope it opens a door for people to, you know, become interested in this part of history, but it also opens a door for further exploration and study for me. And now that the book has been published, I have been hearing from people not only in the Baltics and Poland and Germany, but also people here in the United States that have a connection, including a man in Middle Tennessee who emailed me and said that during the war he was responsible for loading some trucks and came upon a situation where there were a bunch of drowned victims, and he never knew what had happened. And now that he read the book, he had put two and two together that these children that he was loading onto trucks were victims of the Wilhelm Gustloff. And it's chilling and it's exciting, but most of all, it's an honor to try to give voice to these people and family who, you know, who never had a chance to tell their story.
There are very powerful things that happen in the book, and I really don't want to go into any details because I think the book has a lot of twists and turns in it, and things happen to the characters you don't expect. Do you get sad when, because ultimately, I guess you're the one that decides who lives and who dies in the book. Do you get sad when you kill a character off?
I do, and I say that laughing because if I don't, I'll become incredibly sad during this interview. I do. I become woefully attached to these characters. I think that's because they are composites of real people and real human hardship, human experience. And so when they do perish in the book, I'm very sad. And hopefully I can create characters that represent an honest, loving human experience. So then we do feel a sense of empathy and sadness when we lose them. And that's such an important part of the human experience.
Well, it keeps it very real because, you know, when you start reading the book, you know, you can feel it. Like, things are not going to be that rosy for everybody. You know what's going on. And it would be disingenuous, I think, just to save all the main characters or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Or to sort of tie everything up in a bow, because for most people, there was no happy ending.
Right. Now, your story is very interesting itself. You were in the music business for, what, 20 years or something. How did you transition from that into writing your own books?
Well, I always wanted to be a writer, and I wrote my first book in third grade, and it was an abysmal disaster, and I ended up being reprimanded by the school, and it became a banned book in third grade, and it really stole my courage. And at the time, I didn't realize that actually I was on the right track. And so I gave up writing for many years, and instead, I loved music, and I went into the music business and tried to help artists and musicians and songwriters tell story, but through song. And I absolutely loved it. It was a great training ground for being a writer because I was constantly asking, what's the story? What is the story here? And trying to get at the heart of the story, which a heart of the story is, what does the character want? And what does the character have to do, you know, to get what they want? And one day, one of the musicians asked me, they said, well, you know, what's your story? And I said, oh, I'm Lithuanian. And the lead singer of the band said, I'm so sorry, how long have you had that? He thought Lithuanian was an illness. And I said, oh, no, Lithuania is a country. And he responded, he said, you know, I don't think I've ever seen Lithuania on a map. And that really resonated with me because for 50 years, the countries of Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, they weren't on a map. It simply said Soviet Union. And I really started thinking about it. What does it mean to have this Baltic heritage? And would there be a way that I could share with the world more about this experience and what it means to be Baltic and specifically Lithuanian in my case, you know, as the daughter of a refugee, and especially with my name, which in Lithuanian is Ruta Šepetys, it's a big part of my identity. And so I wrote the book, you know, a simple idea, one girl, her dream of freedom, and a voice to speak for people who would never have a chance to tell their story. But never in a million years did I imagine that this would happen and that the book would be so successful and that my publisher would ask me, you know, to write full time. It's truly, I mean, just a dream. I'm so fortunate.
Well, we are fortunate too, and I hope you keep on writing. What's next?
Yes, I am just finishing a book that's set in Spain, post-war, Civil War Spain, during the Franco dictatorship. And the book exposes some of the secrets that we don't know about the dictator, Francisco Franco.
Well, we look forward to that, Ruta. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, the pleasure's been mine. Thank you so much.
For Changing Course, I'm Todd Steed. Changing Course is a production of WUOT.